Welcome to MGO Podcast 12.23. I am going to read my favorite tweet of the year. Sean D. Brown reminds me of Smarf in all the best ways. Love him to death. So before we get to a couple of basketball games that were fun, I thought we should probably talk about some sad news. Former Notre Dame defensive tackle Lewis Nix died at 29 over the weekend. That hit me pretty hard because, you know, Nix is a guy who, even though he plays for a rival, he's just awesome. And you can't dislike him in any way. He was irrepressible. You know, a 300-pound plus nose tackle wearing number one who, when Ace coupled a short video of Nix leaping 1 inch off the ground with R. Kelly's "I Believe I Can Fly." This is a man who retweeted it.
After a loss, too.
After a loss. And just every interaction that you ever saw Lewis Nix have with his teammates, with people around him, was great. And it is a damn shame that he has passed away before the age of 30.
Yeah. You know, as fans, it's weird because we don't interact with these guys personally, but we get a feel for sometimes who they are just in their, like, it comes out in their play, it comes out in some of the things they do, and there has been few who I think left as much of an impression upon opponent fans as Louis Nix. That, like you said, like, it was irrepressible. It was impossible not to see that guy and not to just enjoy the game more because he was out there.
Yeah, stuffing the passer reemerged to mention that. That was, he was their favorite player, and if anybody has captured the fun side of college sports, it was stuffing the passer for Notre Dame, and Lewis Nix really kind of epitomized, you know, that kind of why we watch this in the first place in a lot of ways. Just, you know, there is a connection that you're able to make sometimes with these guys, that even though it is, you know, superficial at a certain level, it can really mean a lot and stand in for a lot. And I think Lewis Nix had a pretty outsized impact on a lot of people for somebody who was here for a tragically short 29 years.
Part of the rich tapestry of college football. All right. Now we should talk about the Indiana game, which was
I mean, do you want to go into sponsors after that? Or
Sure.
All right, so after that, let's do our sponsors, I guess. We want to thank Underground Printing. Make this all possible. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the very beginning. Check out their wide selection of officially licensed Michigan fan gear at their 3 store locations in Ann Arbor, or learn about their custom apparel business at undergroundshirts.com. Let's also not forget our associate sponsors, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, The Residency in Ann Arbor Downtown, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, The Bow Store, Phil Klein Insurance Group, Information Entropy, and introducing the Raw Power app for iOS by Gentlemen Coders.
All right, so Michigan 73, Indiana 57. Michigan also played Iowa. We'll get to that into a second segment, but these games were actually, they felt pretty similar. So you have Franz Wagner going absolutely bonkers. You have Hunter Dickinson completely shutting down the opposition center, who's one of the best players in the league. And you have Michigan sort of steadily moving away from an opponent that should be, you know, able to stay in contact, Iowa more so than Indiana.
I was waiting for that caveat.
One of our friends on Twitter did kind of a whole Alonzo Mourning gif where he was like, "This Michigan looks like they're playing the same system that they used against Iowa." And he's like, "Oh, maybe they are. Maybe they just kind of gave everybody Friday off and go, okay, just do the same thing against Indiana, even though that's a very different team."
Well, I mean, Indiana is Trace Jackson Davis, right? And as he goes, they go. And he went 3 of 12 from the floor. Got to the line a little bit, went 4-7 there, had a couple turnovers, a few assists. But for the second straight game, whenever Hunter Dickinson was in the ball game, he was unable to do anything. So two of his buckets were against Austin Davis. And the other...
That leaves one bucket.
That leaves one bucket against Hunter Dickinson, who, I mean, he comes in to Michigan and you're like, all right, he's a freshman. He's a post. It's going to be a process. And he's immediately one of the best offensive big men in college basketball. And now, is he one of the best defensive big men in college basketball?
I mean, that's where it really gets interesting. Because, I mean, on my show with Alex and Dan, we just had a whole discussion of, and this was mid last week, about who should be the player of the year between Luka Garza and Ayo Dosunmu. And I don't know, it kind of feels like we left a name out now. Like it's wild. And the other wild thing is I don't even know if he is Michigan's best player, because Franz Wagner is also playing out of his mind on both ends of the floor. But for Dickinson to take two elite big men, but two very different big men. I mean, yes. Garza is an inside out technician. Whereas Trace Jackson Davis is more of an off the dribble athlete, and but both, you know, very efficient in the post and usually able to use, you know, their skills to offset whatever size deficiencies they may have at 6'9 or 6'10. But Dickinson's ability to not just wall up, but really impact shots and just make it and stay in front of guys. I mean, staying in front of guys is the part that we didn't expect at this point. And for him to be reading plays at the level he is, it's advanced for a freshman. And then when he, you know, if he gets committed to a play, you know, one thing I noticed in the first like 5 minutes of rewatching the Iowa game was how well Franz Wagner and Isaiah Livers were covering Garza when, say, Dickinson got caught up in a pick and roll, where they weren't even able to get the ball into Garza necessarily. And the same thing with Jackson Davis, where, you know, Michigan's health defense is so on point, so well coached, and so big. I mean, Wagner would be a center on some of these teams. He's basically the same size as Jackson Davis. This is just a ridiculous team at this point, and there's a reason they're now right in that number one conversation.
I mean, we used to talk about Teske as a great defensive center, and, you know, as well, 7-1 as well. But I remember Teske went against Garza in the same building and gave up, 44 points one time?
Yeah, and then 33 the next time. He also got worked by Oturu. Like, as a junior, he seemed like one of the best defensive centers in the country. And then as a senior, he kind of got a little bit exposed.
Right,
and
when they left
because
him one-on-one.
It was because they were asking him to do more. I would say, you know, Juwan Howard had him doing a wider variety of things. And one thing that we pretty much assumed heading into this year that with Dickinson as a freshman, with his size and, you know, relative level of athleticism, that Michigan would be a pretty much straight up drop coverage team. And instead they keep adding more things to his plate. Occasionally he's hedging out now, you know, sometimes they're just straight up switching everything.
Yeah.
With Dickinson on the floor.
Late clock.
And to have that flexibility, I don't know how teams game plan for this. I really don't. And I don't think other teams have figured it out either, because Michigan keeps forcing teams into their worst offensive games of the year. This was pretty darn close to it for Indiana, and they've had some clunkers. So, it never felt like they had a chance in this game. the first time Jackson Davis went at Dickinson, it was like, okay, that's got to be that. And it's just wild to watch this team at this point. I barely feel like I'm taking notes, but it feels like the same notes over and over again in a great
way. Yeah, and it didn't feel like Michigan was especially efficient on the offensive end. Like, they had a lot of shots at the basket that didn't go in. Hunter Dickinson goes 6-for-11, which is okay, but like, you know, you really felt like this was going to be an 8 or 9-for-11 game, but the shots just didn't go down. Except for Franz Wagner, who's off his second consecutive KenPom MVP performance with 21 points on 13 shooting possessions, And he's again filling up the block and steal columns. And Eric Shapiro on Twitter pointed out that Franz was able to hedge on a two-on-one situation to prevent an easy dump off for a dunk and then deflect a pass out of bounds. That doesn't show up in the box score, but Franz Wagner's length to ability to deflect things, like, you know, in the Iowa game, he was able to like rescue a possession where Sean D. Brown got switched onto Garza by just knocking the entry pass out of bounds. Like, that stuff adds up. And so, I mean, we were talking about this before the show. The NBA guys are like, yeah, he's a lottery pick, and that's not really much in question anymore. And that's, yes, he's a lottery pick.
He got a crown.
I mean that play you referenced, where he, not the kind of big takeaway from Shapiro there wasn't just that this is a really impressive play, but that this was kind of indicative of what Wagner in particular, and also Michigan at large, does to opposing offenses, which is dictate how they have to play. Because Wagner dummies towards the guy who you'd ideally get the ball to, and takes away that pass in that moment. But already knows he's already going to pivot and move towards the guy, the other player in the corner, because he has taken away one pass. That's where the other pass is going to go. And he's long enough and athletic enough to stop, go the other way, and deflect that. So he chose the pass for Indiana's player and then knocked it away and put them in a position where they have to take a baseline out of bounds on a short shot clock, which is, yeah, something that never shows up in the box score, but is, you know, a possession ruining play. And Wagner does that on a regular basis. He also, I mean, we've mentioned Michigan was not particularly good on the offensive end in this game. They weren't really dialed in other than Wagner. And the thing that really turned this game around and opened it up for Michigan was that Wagner just kept drawing fouls in the first half. I mean, Indiana started getting into foul trouble early. Michigan got into the bonus. And once they got into the bonus, Wagner just kept going to the basket because he knew that in this game with these matchups, they had nobody who could stay in front of him without hacking him.
Yeah. They go 17 and 19 from the line. The only misses were the Austin Davis misses after the hook and hold. And that is a sea change from a couple of years ago. Just the ability to like get to the line and then knock everything down is another hidden aspect of Michigan's efficiency.
Yeah, one of my good friends was asking about betting this game with a point and a half extra on Michigan's line to take it to minus 10. And one thing I mentioned was like, you know, in a close game, you know, the free throw difference between this team might really come into play. And it turns out, you know, it wasn't close. He won the bet. I felt good about the advice. It just came into play in a different way than I expected.
Yeah, and then you have guys like Livers and Mike Smith who chip in 16 and 14 points in this game. And Livers, you know, he kind of struggles through a first half where he's taken the ball at Jackson Davis a couple times. And Jackson Davis swats him once and then kind of swallows up a second drive, which turns into a really tough, heavily contested shot at the rim. And then in the second half, it's just like, whoops, I just hit 3 3-pointers in a row.
And it really, I mean, like the first one kind of rattles in on a catch and shoot. But then the second one really felt like when the tides turned, because this was a possession where Hunter Dickinson is just working his ass off for post position. And Michigan is spending a lot of this play just like trying to get the ball entered to him. And in one of the few plays all game where they can't really find the right angle, and Jackson Davis is doing a great job at denying it. And, you know, Livers is kind of standing with the ball at the 3-point line, looking at it and, you know, trying to look for an angle and just like, to hell with it. I'm just going to shoot the three. And it was like, oh, that's cool. That's a nice plan B. I like that. So, and then he was just dialed in from that point on. And
then the third one, they doubled off of. They doubled off Isaiah Livers. Like, what are we doing, Archie? What are we doing?
You know, it was a choice. It was definitely a choice.
I wanted to bring up the clunkiness of the offense at the beginning, because I was talking with Matt D after the game about what Indiana was doing, using Trayce Jackson-Davis to kind of deny Hunter. Basically, he was trying to give him the baseline every time, and Hunter was taking it and then getting caught under the basket a little bit. And Dickinson basically slowed down, just tried to back him down instead of always taking that baseline cut. And Indiana's response to that was then to bring the double if that didn't work. And as soon as the double came, you'd pass it out. And then all of a sudden, you know, as soon as Michigan has you off balance a little bit, they just keep widening and widening that crack until there's, you know, an open shot somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would describe Michigan's offense at the beginning as clunky here, because what kind of jumped out to me in the first 5 or 6 minutes is that Michigan was just getting wide open threes that didn't happen to fall. Like every single one of those threes was a great shot. And Michigan's ability, there was particularly one where, you know, Dickinson had it in the post. He got a double. They kicked it out. And then Indiana was able to recover. So there were three passes and Michigan couldn't find an open shot. You know, you have one, it was either Livers or Wagner who took a drive to the basket, then kicked it back to the other wing. And then they were able to find Eli Brooks in the corner for a wide open three. And that kind of, you know, everybody watched the Hoop Vision video on Michigan's offense. If you haven't, go do it immediately. Turn off this podcast.
Yeah.
In your car.
Okay, and people at home turn off this podcast.
Just pull over like, him.
We can't be responsible for that.
He's talking a lot about Michigan's ball movement, right? And he has like the three favorite possessions he had for Michigan this year at the end of the... And I think if he had made that video after this game, that Eli Brooks possession would have been a strong candidate for one of those.
Yeah, just, and that was real early too.
Yes, and it was just beautiful precision. And this isn't a beeline offense, right? Because they don't shoot a whole lot of threes, but that's something that never went away. So, yeah, Michigan turns the ball over a little bit more than they used to. But in terms of regimented, precision, purposeful offense, Michigan preserved all of that.
Well, and one thing that the Hoop Vision video emphasized and that certainly came through on that play and on a few others where Michigan didn't necessarily make shots. And one of those three, you know, of his favorite possessions that he included at the end was a play that ended in a missed three. This play could very well take its place. And I think it was also a missed three by Eli Brooks after the
ball. Yes, it was.
Brooks has been a good shooter. It's just two unfortunate examples for him. But I take notes very quickly. So I just had to write great ball movement on that one because I didn't have time for much else after Dickinson kick out of double. They also use the threat of the post to get Isaiah Livers a straight on three. That doesn't go down, and those are going to go down a lot and did in the second half. To get back to my original point, one thing with the offense is that these guys are just reading plays incredibly well. There's more, I think. I mean, you said regimented, and there is a certain amount of regiment in this, but something else that came up in that Hoop Vision video was that a lot of this is also just read and react. Cut and replace, and that's a lot of stuff that you see in the NBA because you got a 24-second shot clock. You can't have everything drawn up extensively, and a lot of it's just got to be, we have an initial action, and then everything else has just got to be, okay, move to open space, read your matchups, and kind of just play ball. And to see Michigan doing this at such a high level in year two with guys that weren't necessarily recruited for this system.
Some of them weren't even on the team until this year, right? Like three of the six guys who were the main rotation guys are new.
Yeah. So it's important to point out like Mike Smith, especially like my goodness, has he become a totally different player over the last six games? And a lot of it seems to be just a rapidly increasing level of comfort in this offense. That's a huge testament to Juwan Howard, also probably to Howard Eisley and Saadi Washington. This is a fantastic coaching staff, and it's also a fantastic team, but the way this team plays is just beautiful on both ends.
Yeah, and you know what, Mike Smith kind of had a little bit...
Your student noise came back. Maybe pull out the plugs and see if you can twist them tighter.
All right. So that looks like it turned it
off.
Yeah,
now it's gone.
Okay. I don't know. All right. So we're talking about Mike Smith, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, and Smith had kind of a little bit of a reversion to previous form because he had 5 turnovers in this game. Like, one of them was just late clock, and he didn't really have options, so that's fine. But there were a couple of attempted entry passes over fronts that didn't work out. But
there was one that did seem like an Austin Davis issue.
Yeah, but
a couple of banana peels on the floor, too.
Mike Smith is shooting 59% from 3 in Big Ten play.
It's pretty good, especially since an increasing number of them are coming off the dribble.
People keep on bringing up the X comparison, right? Like, would you rather have him than Simpson? And I'm like, at this point, it's not even a comparison, right?
I think that a Hunter Dickinson X pick and roll battery would be pretty good.
I mean, the Mike Smith Dickinson pick and roll battery is pretty darn good as well. And,
I know.
You need shooters around Hunter Dickinson.
And we talked about the spacing.
I've kind of said my piece on this, and I've said it way earlier in the season before Mike Smith became way better. So I think I think I'll double down on I would definitely prefer Mike Smith on this team. And that is no shade to Xavier. Said this is maybe the best team in the country. Don't mess with it.
Okay, well, we're not messing with
Don't even look at it sideways.
Xavier Simpson, I just want to tell you that I didn't say any of those things. So you can hunt down Ace and not me, because I will not anger you. Fair. All right, let's take a break, come back, talk about the Iowa game.
...2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing has 3 convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages approximately $100,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the big house and accessible to ages 21 plus, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
Bonkers. And he only gets 3 free throw attempts.
So... And like 2 of those buckets are against, again, Austin Davis.
Hunter Dickinson's real good.
This was Michigan continually shows you things that you didn't think that they could do, and this was just a shock. Like, I thought Michigan should do this, is just let Luka Garza go against Dickinson and see what happened. But I was expecting him to put up, I don't know, 30 points and for Michigan to still win.
Yeah, that was the strategy of, like, you hope you survive the inevitable Garza onslaught, that even if it isn't consistent through the whole game, you're at least going to get a stretch in there where he's dominant, and then you at least have your other 4 defenders on their shooters. We got something pretty different, and it happened right off the bat. I mean,
yes.
they go at Dickinson right away with Garza, and the first time they do it, Garza puts up a prayer that comes up, what, like 4 feet short of the rim?
I think Dickinson blocked it.
Yeah, I don't know if he got credit for it. But he was just absolutely dominant. And you could see, I mean, the first thing that jumped out is like these guys are listed at 2 inches apart. And that's just a lie. and Garza's listed at 10 pounds heavier. That also has to be a lie. There's just no way. Because every time Garza tried to establish position or go through Dickinson's chest, it just looked like he was ramming into a wall. And you could tell, even on the plays where he managed to make some sort of post move and, you know, at least get something up near the rim, Dickinson's length was bothering him so much that he was missing shots that I think normally go down for him. But when you've got a 7'2" center who's been bothering you all night, is bodying you up and is consistently in great position, you're constantly looking over your shoulder for that guy, even when you get an inch on him. And Garza wasn't getting an inch on him very often.
No, and then that allows Michigan to almost completely shut off Iowa's outside shooting. So they go 6-19 from three. That's 31%, which is a major win against one of the best three-point shooting teams in America. And also, four of those six makes are like tough, contested, off-the-dribble jacks. So they had two, like Garza had a good shot, Keegan Murray had a good shot. You know, they missed a couple of other good shots kind of here and there, but the kind of threes they were getting off were terrible.
I mean, this is where we mentioned the stat of the game, which is that Iowa had four assists.
Four.
This was the best offense in the country. Yeah. Like, what?
I want to thank you real quick, Ace, for letting me write up that game, because I just had so much fun weaving four assists back and forth into the article as I was doing that.
Oh, man. I mean, Jordan Bohannon, their nominal point guard, has none in this game. It's Connor McCaffrey, the guy who is their post entry wizard, has won. It is
literally unbelievable. I'm looking at it right now and I don't believe this happened.
Yeah. I mean, for Michigan to shut off, because Michigan not only shuts off their 2-point and 3-point shooting, they shut down offensive rebounding and they shut off any sort of assisted buckets. So the fact that Iowa only turns it over on 13% of their possessions almost does not matter at all. And that's just boggling. It does help that Michigan also plays an extremely clean game on the other end. And, you know, canning 8 threes is nice too. This was another, Livers is really dialed in game.
Where he has like 16 points by the end of the game and you're like, was he out? Is he playing?
and you know, Wagner has an efficient 21.
Efficient doesn't cover that.
Yeah, he went off.
Wagner has a bonkers 21. Just fantastic. Also 4 assists and only 1 turnover, work in the pick and roll. An absolute, you know, this is why he's seen as a high floor lottery pick for the NBA draft kind of game. And we're just going to have to accept that. Come to terms and, you know, hopefully get an NCAA championship in the interim, because my goodness, this team looks amazing.
I still think there's like a 5% chance that Mo talks him into coming back, but
I'm clinging to the, like, you know, you just love college that much and you're still young hope, but, few games.
It was the way he did it too. Cause Dickinson gets in foul trouble a little bit and he has to go out for his third foul early in the second half, and you're like, oh no, right? Like, here we go. Garza's going to feast for a little bit, and it's going to be back to, you know, a 10-point Iowa lead. Instead, he stakes Michigan out to a 9-point lead, because it's just the show, right, on both ends of the court. I think we all three found a way to point out another one of those plays where, like, someone gets beat, and all of a sudden Franz is coming from behind with his Gumby arms and knocking the ball away, and this time he just knocked out of bounds, but it was still like, dude.
Yeah, we should talk about Austin Davis and Brandon Johns in this game, though, because they get 16 minutes, and in those 16 minutes, Luka Garza does get a couple buckets on Austin Davis, but he does not in any way go off.
No.
And Johns does this by fronting him in a way that just kind of shuts off any post entries at all. Austin Davis plays him a little more traditionally, And then there's like the sequence where Davis bodies Garza up, forces a miss, goes right down, and then just gets an easy layup off a subsequent post-up on Garza. And you're just like, what the hell just happened?
We were winning that matchup. Things are going great.
Like, Dickinson, Michigan was a positive in this game. They were above zero when Dickinson was on the bench, which is mind blowing.
What anyone expect? Yeah, just not. Especially since he also had a tiny bit of bench mob time in there too.
So there
are five non garbage time Terrence Williams minutes in there. And what's most noticeable with this team is that, you know, even if, you know, like Johns, you can tell when he's out there because he's just a very active player on both ends, and sometimes, you know, still turning it over a little bit too much, and you know, you can tell he's putting
sped
it
up
there.
Yeah,
but on defense he's locked in. I mean, he's sped up on offense, but that guy knows where to be on defense, is confident in his defensive ability, and is playing really well on that end. Terrence Williams does not jump out as somebody who's screwing up assignments on that end when he's in there with the other rotation guys. For Michigan to hold freaking Iowa to 0.85 points per possession when, you know, you're mixing in 8 minutes each from Davis and Johns, 6 minutes from Terrence, it just, I can't stop looking at this box score.
All right, so here's the stat. Luka Garza has 33 minutes in this game. Austin Davis and Brandon Johns have 16. They have one fewer bucket from two, and they have two more rebounds than Luka Garza. Austin Davis and Brandon Johns outplayed Luka Garza. Is that real?
We could also point out that first of all, good God, man, that's a crazy stat.
Yes, thank you. But,
here's another one. Michigan's top six players all had more defensive rebounds than Luka Garza.
Well, he only had the one.
Do I need to turn the music
that's
on
crazy.
Here,
Ace?
I mean, are we going to slow jam this?
That's coming later this week. Later this week. We have to wait for the Illinois game first. Another thing that does jump out about this team is that, I mean, Dickinson's great at clearing out the boards himself, but also the secondary rebounding you get on the defensive end from Wagner and Livers, and even you know, Eli Brooks had six defensive rebounds in this game. You know, these guys swoop in, attack the glass, are really good when they end up cross matched at just staying in front of guys, sealing them off, not being undisciplined about, you know, like Dickinson can go and get out of area rebounds. So can Wagner, Livers a little bit. But guys aren't going for hopeless stuff where it's opening up, you know, players slipping past them to get putbacks or whatever. This is just, I mean, I keep coming back to it, but such a well-coached team. It's crazy.
Swinging back to the Indiana game just briefly, because we had that slam by Livers when he just came in out of nowhere.
Should have been mentioned. Yes.
Should have been mentioned. Everybody tweeted something in all caps after that.
Right. I mean, I just went with the classic, because I really, my fingers are fumbling.
The turnovers in this game, just seven. They had 11 against Indiana, which isn't great, but it is acceptable. And then you kind of flip over to KenPom, and Michigan was kind of scuffling in turnover rate early this year. They're up to 71st. So this was a pattern that happened last year, right, where Michigan started out and they had a ton of turnovers early in the year. And then they got better and better and better. And by the end of the year, I think they were – what did they finish last year? They finished 11th last year. And that's not going to happen this year. But, you know, we talk about how many different things Michigan's offense is doing. So it kind of feels like that might be – a trend under Juwan Howard, where they have some turnover issues early in the year because everything's coming together. But then once they figure out what they're doing, they steadily improve, and then their offense goes from good to great. There's the conference only Michigan KenPom page is crazy. So they're the best team in the conference in effective field goal percentage, the best team in the conference in effective field goal percentage defense. They give up fewer free throws than anybody in the conference. They give up fewer threes than anybody in the conference. They give up fewer assists than anybody in the conference. They're the number one two-point defense. They block the second most shots. They're the third best three-point defense. They're the best free throw shooting team. Just everything about this team is that they're trying to do, they're doing superbly. And the things that they don't try to do is they don't really try to turn you over a lot, which fine. You know, so just the ability for Juwan Howard to implement this, like, it is insane that Michigan has the second best 2-point defense in the nation, and they are the best team at avoiding free throws in the Big Ten. Yeah, that combination that really, is crazy.
That came to the forefront against Indiana, where Michigan goes to Assembly Hall, goes against the team that draws the most free throws of any team in the Big Ten, and has a massive free throw advantage. Once again, in Assembly Hall against a team that draws more free throws than anybody else in the Big Ten. Not only do you not have to worry about a road whistle, Michigan dominates the whistle. It's crazy.
It is.
And then you flip over to the national rankings and you know they're fifth in offense and fourth in defense and have passed Baylor now by a couple points in the overall KenPom standings, which I don't think we've mentioned yet because the Baylor finally blinked and lost a game coming off a COVID pause, which Michigan managed to avoid.
Yeah.
I also caught a little bit of Gonzaga last night, and I don't know. I'm afraid to say things. I'm just going to stop. I'm going to stop now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say anything negative about Gonzaga, but it's hard to be scared of them, right? Like, they gave up 88 points to Iowa in an 85 possession game. So
yeah, different type of game.
And they play so fast, and I feel like Michigan has an advantage against teams that really want to play fast.
Yeah, and their best player, their most dominant player is their center. And their center's 6'10", so I'm going to stop talking now.
So we're going to take a little bit of a look around the league, but we're also going to talk women's basketball and hockey after the break.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them. You should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
This is a special message from our friends at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown. All of our best to the MGO Blog family, and a special thanks to the medical community, healthcare workers, emergency personnel, and all essential workers that are keeping our world going. We miss you all. Hope everyone is staying safe, healthy, and home.
Every star above, Mr. Big Stuff.
according to BartTorvik.com, Michigan has a 99.8% chance of winning the Big Ten championship, under the assumption that they just go by win percentage, because it would be crazy if they didn't. And they can sew it up against Illinois. And then Brad Underwood was mad that Michigan didn't play like Northwestern and Penn State again.
Yeah, like
we play everybody on our schedule.
Would actually be significantly better if they had crammed those games in, but they'd be risking injury. Yeah, thanks, Brad. Michigan has a very good chance of finishing with more wins than Illinois anyway, just outright. Torvik's win matrix is giving Michigan about a 55% chance at finishing with 16 wins, making that their most likely outcome. Illinois' most likely outcome is actually to lose out. That's about a 47% chance, because their remaining two games are at Michigan and at Ohio State. And that might be understating things, because Ayo Dosunmu has a broken nose. Those are going around in the Big Ten this year. So he has missed the last two games. They almost let Wisconsin come back and beat them to lock up the Big Ten title before Michigan had a chance to take it from them. These odds don't take into account that Dosunmu might miss the Michigan game at the very least.
It's odd, because usually like a broken nose isn't a thing that, I mean, you just get a mask and it's okay, right? It's very strange.
They usually sit out a week depends. And then get a mask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a reasonable, and man, that was a hard shot.
I have $1 that says he plays against Michigan.
I hope he does, because I want Michigan to beat a full strength Illinois team to win this championship and get Brad Underwood to shut up.
It would be slightly funny if Michigan State facilitated Michigan's Big Ten championship by both beating Illinois and knocking out Ayo Dosunmu for our game.
So either outcome has, you know, its benefits.
I mean, keep in mind, those odds, though, are based on Michigan State not being giant killers, and their last two games are beating Illinois and Ohio State. So,
well, I guess we should talk about that team then, because they are currently right on the bubble now after those two victories, in which they just hacked the hell out of everybody and bet that it wouldn't bite them in the ass. And it didn't against Illinois, because Illinois went 19 of 34 from the free throw line. Kofi Coburn goes 3 of 11. And I mean, I think this is a major issue for Illinois relative to last year, because last year he hit 67% of his free throws. That has dropped 10 points.
Well, and here's the other issue for them. Michigan State actually kind of had a sort of perfect situation for defending Kofi Coburn, which is having a gazillion big men to double down on him and hack him. They had a lot of fouls to give, but also, I mean, we've mentioned Kofi Coburn has what, 2 assists in Big Ten play?
His
all
assist
year?
Rate is 1.
And I believe our friend Brian McKenzie pointed out in our Slack chat that he went and looked at his 2 Big Ten assists, and one of them should have been a turnover. Once he gets the ball, and this is somewhat understandable considering how they often have trouble getting it into him, he's just not giving it up. And that means that the strategy for playing him is pretty obvious, which is don't just double, triple. And that's what State was doing in this game. And it worked really well, because, I mean, Coburn was only 5 for 11 from 2. In addition to his issues at the line, he only has 1 turnover, but he has 0 assists. And this was a game where they kind of packed the paint a little bit. Illinois was not dialed in from beyond the arc, and Michigan State was able to come away with a pretty surprising win. That doesn't necessarily, like, it didn't make me think that much more of Michigan State, because this felt like a very opponent specific, matchup dictated victory for them. But they obviously have come around a little bit, and I think something that's helped is, you know, Foster Lawyer has been out, and not only does that mean that he's not on the court, it means that at the very least Tom Izzo kind of has no choice but to stick with Rocket Watts. And I really think he needs to just be, he's got to let his most talented player play through some mistakes, and in this game he was relatively effective, and got to play 31 minutes and wasn't constantly looking over his shoulder for a garden gnome. I think some of Izzo's decisions being made for them have kind of helped them with this late season surge.
Yeah, and then they go play Ohio State. Ohio State does not have Kyle Young for this game, so they play Musa Diallo for 32 minutes. Musa Diallo takes zero shots in 32 minutes. So they put it all on Washington and Liddell, and this is a game in which Chris Holtmann gets ejected with 1.4 seconds left because he's already picked up a tech. And I believe it was Dwayne Washington drives to the basket, gets absolutely obliterated, like hacked.
This was a poorly officiated game.
And there's no call. And you're just like, it feels like Michigan State has discovered that what they need to do to be competitive is just commit so many fouls that the refs are like tired of blowing the whistle. And they're just, their lips are just chapped and they're just like, oh, it's not worth it.
And that
it's not
is
new
for
Michigan State.
No,
it is notable that the Michigan State Ohio State game already had 40 fouls called in 40 minutes. So your theory holds there. Whereas you know, if you look at the Michigan Iowa game, there were significantly. I think that game ended with 25 fouls. I mean, and that was a wonderful basketball game with a couple of reviews that pissed off Fran McCaffrey in ways that were mostly hilarious. So I'm cool with it. By turning it into this total hack fest, and also by the officials kind of allowing it to be this hack fest and deciding to keep things evened out, which is always kind of a an official's folly. I'm not surprised to scroll down to the bottom of the KenPom page and see that the highest ranked ref in this game is 19th and the other two are below 40th. I'll put it that way.
Well, and also if you go look at the rim and mid-range splits, Michigan State goes 15 to 28 in the mid-range against Illinois, and they're also above 50% in the Ohio State game.
Big Josh Langford game against Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to happen sometimes when you have a lot of skilled mid-range shooters, but I think the rest of the season has demonstrated that that is not really a consistent way to win basketball games. And they had some fortune on the free throw line against Illinois. They had some fortune in terms of injury against Ohio State. So they pulled out some wins that are very important for their tourney candidacy. But I don't really think a whole lot different about Michigan State, as you mentioned, after this winning streak.
Certainly not in terms of how they match up with Michigan. Because Kyle Young being out for Ohio State was a big problem for them. Ohio State still almost won. And we've mentioned the whistle was pretty suboptimal for Ohio State in this game. I was pretty on board with Chris Holtmann's first technical because I thought that was one of the rare. I usually think coaches intentionally getting technicals is pretty stupid. But with the way that the game was being called, I think him running out onto the court to scream at an official and make sure that they call the tech and try to get the game changed midstream was kind of their best hope at that point. And it didn't quite work, but unfortunately for him, this also happens as Ohio State is kind of, slowing down a little bit. They haven't quite been, they've been very reliant on Dwayne Washington hitting a lot of stuff. Wisconsin's also slowing down. And we will get more data points because we're recording this before Michigan State plays Maryland today. And also a real statement on how the conference race has narrowed. Iowa and Ohio State play this afternoon and we don't care.
Yeah. Well, we care, but it's
sort
not
of
urgent.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Care in the, passing interest for potential Big Ten tournament matchup kind of a thing.
All right, so let's move on to the other sports. Hockey gets a very frustrating old-fashioned three-point weekend.
Aggregate.
Go ahead. Arizona State, they win going away the first night, and then the second night is 1-1, and Arizona State's goal is just ridiculous pinball crap, and Michigan outshoots them something like 42-12. And what are you going to do, right?
This is a red tie. Like this is a Red Berenson era. Like we just peppered their goalie with shots, and the crossbar hit a bunch of them.
You can't watch this team play at the level they're playing at and see them get the results they're getting and not be extremely frustrated. And I don't think that there's any sort of magic sauce that they're going to learn to make this not happen. I just think that they're just snake bit right now, and that sucks. But that's life. And you just got to hope that the tournament committee is not stupid enough to leave Michigan out of the tournament.
Well, they can't use pairwise this year.
No, there's no pairwise. So
so they have to watch the games.
They're just going to be looking at records and whatnot. And, you know, never underestimate college hockey's ability to screw something up.
So what does Michigan need to do to make the turn or to, like, safely get
well, in? Well, like, they're 13-8-1 right now. So, like, they have a record that most years in a league like the Big Ten would get you in. You know, if they go by like winning percentage and teams that are in like Atlantic Hockey or whatever, I don't know. So they have games at Minnesota this weekend, and I think a split, they need a split. And for whatever reason, they haven't announced that, like, the Michigan State game in East Lansing, they haven't announced that they're going to reschedule the other one that got postponed. So they missed a series with Penn State, which I think is just done. But, like, I'm surprised that they're not getting in another Michigan State game. I mean, I guess, so Michigan's playing Friday, Saturday, and then the Michigan State game is Wednesday, and then the Big Ten tournament starts on Sunday. So maybe they just don't have room to put it in. But
that would be a lot of hockey and not a lot of time.
You know, I'd feel like a split against Minnesota and then beating Michigan State, you know, that puts you at, like, what, 15-9-1? That feels solid to me. If you get swept by Minnesota, you know, you might be a little nervous.
Okay.
So how's the women's basketball going?
Speaking of frustrating, it's been a kind of up and down stretch. They've lost two of their last three. The Indiana game last week was just a brutally whistle-plagued game where fans on both sides were kind of saying, well, this one's going to be determined by which team's key players end up in the biggest foul trouble. And Michigan's entire front court had four fouls for, like, the entire fourth quarter. So Indiana, in addition to that, also makes a season high in three-pointers by, I think they hit it before the fourth quarter started. So just kind of a frustrating way to lose by 5 points in a game where, you know, the Indiana's very good. They're a top 15 team. And it would have been a nice resume builder and just didn't quite come together in that way. They did get a good win the next time out against Ohio State. Solid revenge game after, you know, Naz Hillman dropped 50 on them in the previous matchup and Michigan still lost because, in large part because they were shorthanded and just couldn't hit a three to save their lives. A lot more balanced approach in this game, as you might suspect, with Leah Brown back in the lineup. And also the story of that one was Amy Dilk playing maybe her best game of the year after being benched a couple of weeks ago in favor of Maddie Nolan, because I think now that we've seen how it played out, Kim Barnes-Errico wanted to give her a little bit of a wake-up call. Her quote was that it was for defense, but I think pulling her out of the starting lineup and then reinserting her the next game says it was more of a we're sending a message kind of a thing. And then most recently, Michigan just got bombed out of the building by Iowa and their spectacular freshman, Caitlin Clark. This was a game where Iowa's women's basketball team is pretty much the same as their men's basketball team, just not quite as good. Insanely good offense, don't really play much defense. And in this game, the threes were just raining in to an extent that Michigan was unable to match. Michigan's not much of an outside shooting team, and this one just got away from them early. The Minnesota game that was supposed to happen today was canceled flat out because there's just no time to make up for it. So there is probably just one game left in the regular season against Northwestern. The good news is the recent losses haven't really hurt Michigan's tournament standing too much because they did get kind of a signature win against Ohio State. It was top 15. And then the big issue for the tournament committee when they were putting out their mock bracket was that Michigan just hadn't played enough games and hadn't played enough marquee games. So between getting Indiana and Ohio State in there and then getting Northwestern, which is a pretty good team, although they've been tailing off lately to end the season. It looks like Michigan's probably going to be around a five seed. That's where they've kind of locked into even after this most recent loss. So you hope, you know, a home game against Northwestern, they finish the season off and maybe climb back up to a four. It looks like they unfortunately have a fair amount of room to move just because of the kind of small sample of games this year.
Sure.
The tournament, I think, is going to determine a fair amount of their seeding.
All right. We're gonna
One more thing I want to add about softball. Megan Bobian had 19 strikeouts and 21 batters faced against Purdue. She's up to 41 strikeouts and 21 innings this year.
Not bad.
Not bad. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk a little football recruiting.
Win or lose this season, stop in to Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the big house and accessible to ages 21 plus, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
...2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing has 3 convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Christian Lander thinks they should be in high school. Seth, give me your raw steak.
Chrysler staff should be standing by to throw all the cardboard fans on the court if Michigan clinches.
That's just true.
Yeah, I agree like with that a lot.
Yeah, that's we need like catapults to make this happen.
I also really want to see Juwan Howard triumphantly carrying his own cutout around the court.
Yeah, like, and some of them go awry, and like Ayo Dosunmu breaks his nose again because something flew into his head. This is, I mean, that would probably would be bad, but it would be
that might not be great.
That would
should keep this in good spirits.
I mean, Brad Underwood is already pretty bad.
Now, if it broke Brad Underwood's nose, I might be here for that.
Yeah, that's an option. All right, stop. Ace, give me your raw steak.
Northwestern should extend Chris Collins again. They just beat Minnesota at the barn.
Oh, come on.
Minnesota's falling apart right now.
Shh. I'm just
Bowie scored 25.
Like, who's going to hire John Beilein this offseason?
Indiana.
Indiana.
No, no.
I could take him at Northwestern.
I could totally deal with him at Northwestern. John Beilein at Indiana would maybe break me.
That would be bad.
I would not enjoy it at all.
No.
Imagine the shooters. Imagine the shooters.
He'd just go to every small town in Indiana and just find the one guy who doesn't do anything else.
It'd be a team of Jordan Holes.
All right, my raw take. Hunter Dickinson is the defensive player of the year in the Big Ten.
Over Franz?
I find that a raw take because Franz Wagner should be the defensive player of the year in the Big Ten, and I think he locked it up this week.
Okay, did Franz Wagner single-handedly shut down Luka Garza?
Well, I don't think saying the Dickinson single-handedly shut down Luka Garza is a fair statement, but that's why this is a hot take.
It's I
mentioned the Livers and Wagner help that was very consistent on him on rolls, like that segment.
Also, how much better did he do than Austin Davis?
I have had my statement down since the beginning. And we also, you know, did spend a long time talking about multiple Franz Wagner plays that did not show up in the box score, and his box score stats are also insane.
That is true.
But it's cool that we're arguing between two Michigan players. I like this part.
Also, like, if we're making an all-defense team in the Big Ten, this is not going to happen, but three Michigan players should be first-team all-defense. Hunter Dickinson, Franz, and Eli Brooks.
Like, yeah, I'm down for that.
They have the number one defense in the conference by some distance, and like,
what's funny is I was waiting for you to choose between one of three different players for that third spot.
Well, I mean, Shawnee comes off the bench, so it's harder. But
Isaiah Livers is a really darn good defender too, and he plays a lot.
You could make a case that the all defense team in the Big Ten should just be Michigan players.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Michigan's defensive ratings are making a pretty good case for it too right now. But yeah, I mean, the Big Ten is full of good enough defenders, and they will not concentrate it in such a way that end up happening. But we're going to get to complain about some robberies and have chips on our shoulders, and that's even better as far as I'm concerned.
There will be a this week's obsession that is very testy about the Big Ten awards, I'm sure of it. All right, if you would like us to continue doing this extremely silly segment, check out Raw Power for iOS and Mac. It's an advanced photo editor and manager. Raw Power is written by a Michigan alum. It's great with RAWs and JPEGs, work with your Apple library, and adds editing features no other app has. Check it out at rawpower.app. So on the football recruiting front, the big news is that Michigan got a five-star cornerback, in-stater Will Johnson, the number one player in the class, and I think a desperately needed recruiting win for Michigan.
Yeah, he's not just a five-star at a position where five stars matter the most, and, you know, a five-star that Ohio State wanted badly, and a five-star that, like, you know, Michigan really, really needs. That position has just been dying for some talent infusion lately. And it's a position where you can't fake talent. He is also, like, one of the most important recruits in Michigan history as far as, like, Detroit recruiting. Because, like, he is the son of one of the guys who runs Sound Mind, Sound Body. He's the guy, you know, he has been on every single trip. I mean, he used to room with Devin Funchess when he was a kid. Right, like this guy. I know
his dad played at Michigan,
and his dad played at Michigan. Right, but I mean, his dad knows everybody though. Like Tim Banks, who's now at Tennessee, but you know was at Penn State. Like they played together in high school, so he goes back even further with him. And like you know, Kentucky's Klinksale was here. You know, he's a defensive backs coach, and he was trying early. Mo Lindquist tried to get in early, like years ago when he was at Texas A&M. Like everybody was coming for this guy, and everybody seemed to have an in. Like Ohio State, Kerry Coombs has done wonderful in Michigan, and they brought him back. And like, you know. So getting Will Johnson is huge, and also because he's kind of a J.J. McCarthy type, where he wants to go out and become Michigan's main recruiter now. And he's already been kind of in contact with Walter Nolan, who's five-star defensive tackle out of Tennessee, and Jane Gould, who's you know another one of these big-time defensive backs that Michigan wants this year. And those guys are taking notice that Will Johnson's going to be in this class.
And so now we're looking at an in-state class that looks pretty good for Michigan in general. Like, of the top seven guys who have fielded crystal balls, five of them, all of them are Michigan. Alex Van Sumeren is one of those guys, and that kind of feels like that's not going to happen anymore.
It's not as terrifying as it was before, because now, like, Nui is, is offering defensive tackles all over the country. He seems to be in good shape with some of these guys from Florida, who, you know, Florida always seems to produce pretty good nose tackles. So I'm not too worried about that, just considering there's other options there. But, yeah, everybody else. Michigan went from kind of having to fight off Mel Tucker to Mel Tucker doesn't have a chance. I think, you know, hiring Ron Bellamy changed a lot of things there. You know, it made sure people in Detroit knew that Harbaugh is really serious about his relationships in Detroit, and that, like, the coaching fraternity there is going to know that they have a guy that they can talk to all the time, which was something Fred Jackson did for years for Michigan and kind of has been lacking ever since we lost him.
Well, you got to, you know, give Mel Tucker a chance to get an on-field win against Michigan, maybe wait for them to have a down year and some coaching turmoil, and, you know, then maybe he can jump in and recruit the state of Michigan pretty well.
This is a pretty solid year in state. So early on, there are 12 four-stars in the state, which is not a particularly usual number. Now, Antonio Gates Jr. is a Michigan State legacy, so he's probably ticketed for them, but it doesn't really seem like they've made much inroads on anybody else in that four-star range.
Well, and State was doing pretty good with Tayshaun Trent earlier. They were doing pretty good with Dylan Tatum, who I know played for Ron Bellamy at West Bloomfield. But, like, hiring Bellamy, I think, probably, and putting him at safeties coach pretty much ended it with Dylan Tatum, who is, I think that guy might move up into the top 150. You watch his tape and you're like, I don't know where you're going to put him necessarily, but anywhere is going to be good. And in the kind of defense Michigan wants to play, I'm pretty excited about him because he could play anything from, like, Viper to free safety. And then Tayshaun Trent is a very large receiver out of East Point. And Michigan State thought they had that guy wrapped up. I think some crystal balls came in for him just a few weeks ago. And, you know, they've been doing pretty well with Gattis's little guys and fast guys, but they haven't had a whole lot of run down the field and just body people out of the way receivers lately. And Trent definitely fits that mold.
Missing Nico.
He's gonna have like a 20-year NFL career, and it's gonna be like, should have thrown to the ball more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there is a guy, I don't know how well Michigan stands with him right now, but Darius Clemens, he's officially from Oregon now, but he grew up in East Lansing. He's like best friends since he was a kid with Andre Anthony. And Bellamy, as soon as he took over receivers, like, that was his first call, right? He was like, I'm calling you, Darius. You got to come back to Michigan. And I think that the coaches have been pretty, coming on pretty strong for him, too. And he's another one of those guys who probably more than Tayshaun Trent is like a Nico Collins, just gets down the field so fast and is so large and gets up like that. He's already in the top 150, and he also has some mobility upwards, so that'd be a really good pull. On the other two receivers, they've been after these two guys from Illinois that Gattis loves forever, right? J.J. McCarthy's buddies. Those two, Tyler Moore still looks like he's pretty likely to go to Michigan, and Caleb Brown, who's the slot receiver, friends with A.J. Henning. That's kind of becoming a Michigan-Ohio State battle, so I don't know how that one's going to come down, but it might come down to whether it looks like Gattis is still going to be coaching here for a while, at the end of next year.
All right. Any other notable movement to look for in the next couple weeks?
Yeah, Trent is going to come in soon, I think. And I think they're going to get Tatum in not too long. They are trying to find a quarterback, but that five-star shadow problem Michigan always has, you know, they get J.J. McCarthy in the last class and they just can't get anybody in the next one. And there's been this like whole QB domino effect. I put it in the thing. It's just impossible to follow how many different quarterbacks just picked their schools. But one of the things that fell the wrong way for us is that Alabama got the guy that they were fighting Clemson for, which means Clemson, who has like the same board as Michigan, is now dipping into that board, which means Michigan's probably going to come down to trying to get either Drew Allar from Ohio or Taven Jackson, who's Trace Jackson Davis's younger brother.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, just imagine Trace Jackson Davis as a quarterback, and that's pretty much what this guy is. Anyway, that's...
Well, I'd feel better about that if he could shoot.
He's a little wild. That's the knock on him, but very talented. So, and then tight end, there's a... like. Remember, they've had three guys in Georgia that they've been looking at this whole time. Marlon Klein, they got in the class early. They were one of the first schools to scout Oscar Delp, but now Georgia is really coming strong for that guy, and so I think Delp might go to Georgia. But Holden Stays decommitted from Penn State.
Wait, what is his name?
It's States misspelled. If you take the T out of the word States, because every single time I type it, it tries to autocorrect.
I'm hoping so bad that there's a second E in there.
Nope. Nope. It is exactly like they would put it on a car. anyway, I think Notre Dame is pushing the hardest right now, but Michigan certainly was. Michigan was like his first offer. His dad is friends with Michael Elkin. So, you know, MGO Blog has an in. I don't know if the coaches are getting anywhere with that one, but. So, I mean, that's a possibility, but they really want to get two tight ends in this class because they keep on having this, they keep on getting like one of the guys they scout and then try to go for a national dude and they never make it with a national dude. They always find out, like, come out second in that. So they really want to get two in this class one way or another. Offensive line, I can't make hide nor hair of it because the board's almost completely different from what it was under Warner.
That is such an old man phrase. I like it.
Hide nor hair?
Yeah. Very.
We are in our 40s now, Brian.
I know. We gotta lean into it. You're in your 40s too, Ace.
Pardon me?
No, it's you know, that's what happens. You get old faster.
By osmosis. Yeah. Dang it.
All right. Well, that'll about wrap it up for us. We'll hit you next week, guys.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Mace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. I am already upset about Eli Brooks' first team all defense snub. Do we just cackle for a while in the intro to this one, or
no?